Hello, Park Street. Welcome back. Today is day 21 of Lent, and I've really enjoyed recording these episodes with all of you, and thanks to anyone who's still listening. I appreciate it. I'm back today with Ken and Sherry Van Dyne, and today we're talking about John chapter 10, the Good Shepherd and his sheep. And I've been nominated to read this passage, so I'm going to go ahead and do that out of the New Living Translation. These are the words of Jesus. I tell you the truth, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going in through the gate must surely be a thief and a robber. But the one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. Those who heard Jesus use this illustration didn't understand what he meant, so he explained it to them. I tell you the truth. I am the gate for the sheep. All who come before me were thieves and robbers. But the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. They will come and go freely and will find good pastures. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will abandon the sheep because they don't belong to him and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them and scatters the flock. The hired hand runs away because he's working only for the money and doesn't really care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me. Just as my Father knows me, and I know the Father. So I sacrifice my life for the sheep. I have other sheep, too, that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock with one shepherd. The Father loves me because I sacrifice my life so I may take it back again. No one can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily, for I have the authority to lay it down when I want to, and also to take it up again, for this is what my Father has commanded. When he said these things, the people were again divided in their opinions about him. Some said, "He's demon-possessed and out of his mind. Why listen to a man like that?" Others said, "This doesn't sound like a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" So what are we to make about all this shepherd and sheep and gates and all of this?
There's a lot of contrasts in this whole thing, but it is hard to figure out, I think, because how can you be the gate and the shepherd going in and out of the gate?
Right.
This has always been a question.
This is why all the kids learn in Sunday school that the answer is always Jesus, right?
Right. Exactly.
He's multiple things.
Exactly.
Well, but typically the sheep pen would have only had one opening, and when Jesus used the illustration of the gate, the shepherd would typically sleep in the opening, so the sheep would be inside
enclosed
for the night or whatever, and so Jesus is saying, you know, I'm standing right here at the door protecting, you know, my sheep while they are resting or in a quiet place for the evening. But when it comes daytime, then the shepherd gets out of the gate and calls his own, you know, the sheep that knows him and know his voice to follow him, and he leads them out to green pastures, mm-hmm. For the day. But I just think it's an interesting role where the shepherd here is in control, sort of as we talked about, you know, in our last episode. But the good shepherd, I looked up shepherd. And one of the interesting things, it says people who have authority over other people, could be a boss, it could be a president who runs a country, it could be a governor, could be, you know, any person of leadership, you know, could be a pastor, you know, is a shepherd. He's got a group that he is concerned about, and looks after their needs.
But they're not all good shepherds.
Well, right, and there's this, that's the interesting thing, is that throughout the prior chapters of John, there's been this I guess rivalry might be even a too not strong enough word to use. There's a growing fight mm-hmm. brewing between Jesus and the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm.
And in this passage, Jesus is making, you know, he's saying, look, I'm the shepherd, and yeah. you guys are the hired hands. And you don't care about the sheep like I do.
You run away from them,
yeah.
Well, it's very clear, because at one point there in verse 10, the thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy, but my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. So, you know, Jesus is divine. The line there is between the two purposes, if you want to compare them, is just so different. The thief has a way different purpose than what Jesus has for us and for his sheep. He wants to give us life, and life more abundantly, I think it says in good old King James. That's what it's for, you know, that's what he wants for us.
I mean, the good shepherd would take his sheep out to the good pastures and lead them there. He would lead them to the good pastures. Now, you have to take the dumb sheep out there that wanders off and gets caught in the briars, and the good shepherd has to go look, you know, for the stray ones. But, you know, he brought them to a good place
mm-hmm.
And wants them to be fed and encouraged and well taken care of, but the sheep are the ones that wander off, and it's, you know, the other parable of the lost sheep where Jesus leaves the 90, or a good shepherd would leave the 99 and go find the one that was lost.
Yeah.
I love the fact, well, there's quite a responsibility actually, that the sheep know him and know his voice and are willing to, and follow. And how cool is that? That we're supposed to follow, and we're supposed to know him so well that we know his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend, it was long, long ago, that used to say, how can you know God? How can you know God? Because God is so amazing and so big and so huge and all this. And we kept, and most of us kept saying, we don't know, but we can. We just know that we can.
Yeah.
And it's just so, it's hard to prove that you can know his voice in your life, that you can know him in our lives. But it's possible. He says so. It's possible. My sheep know my voice. What a blessing and what a promise that is for us.
Yeah, it's not just, Ken, I liked what you said about the shepherd having leadership and the fact that he is in control of where the sheep go. He mm-hmm. makes sure they're safe in the pen. He takes them to, you know, which a pen is enclosed, you know, so mm-hmm. they can't go wherever they want. He keeps them in places where they won't get into danger. But then he also leads them out of that enclosed place to a place where they can be, you know, it says they will come and go freely. You know, and I think there's just, it's not just the leadership, though, over the sheep. It's also the relationship, the voice, right? That you, God is just not, you know, pulling the strings on our lives. Although he, frankly, in my life, I've seen he does do that a lot in the way he's kind of orchestrating things. But he's also, it's not just like a hierarchical thing. It's a relationship thing as well.
Well, I mean, the good shepherd knows their sheep, and he calls them by name. You know that, you know, it's not just I'm here doing my job.
Right.
There is that personal relationship that he knows their name. He cares for them. I mean, a shepherd wouldn't just sit around and let the sheep graze. If there was one that was hurting, you know, he might be tending that sheep, or, you know, he was going beyond just being there where the sheep were.
Well, if you're naming the sheep, then you're around them enough to, you know, that's not just something that you do, you know, if you're around for a day or two.
Well, the other part, I guess, towards the end of this, too, that we can't not catch is the, well, there's two things. The one thing he says, it's one flock and one shepherd. And that's very pointed, because Jesus is teaching as time gets short. Now, this is getting closer and closer to when Jesus will die for us, that he's trying to explain again and again that he's not just come for the Jews. He's laying that foundation that he's mm-hmm. come for everybody. He's going to, and the words in this passage is sacrifice. I'm going to sacrifice. He's trying to lay that foundation with those around him who aren't getting it yet.
Yeah, he has the authority to lay his life down and to pick it back up. You know, that's, you know, if that doesn't tell you the cross, you know.
Well, it didn't tell them that.
But
it was clues.
Know, it tells us that.
It was clues
as we're reading it. Yeah.
For them. He was trying to, you know, trying to prepare them, honestly. I'm going to do that. I'm going to lay down my life. I'm going to sacrifice. And it's for everyone. For everyone. So it's just really pretty cool.
No, there are a lot. I think part of one of, I mean, what led me to do this and get interested in Lent specifically was the idea of just concentrating and meditating on the death of Christ. And when you read the Bible looking for places where Jesus talks about his own death, you start to see it almost on every page. I mean, it's very, and throughout the book of John, there's all kinds of references to his death. And in this case, it's obvious, it's an obvious reference, but it's not so veiled like it can be in some other parts of the book. But you're right, he says, and it's interesting, he says, I sacrifice my life so I may take it back again, which is kind of an interesting wording. You know, he doesn't say I'll look at other translations. It doesn't say like I sacrifice it and then I'll take it back. You know, like it's like so that I may. They're linked in some way that seems to be more
when the word
significant.
Speaks like voluntarily, this translation uses voluntarily. I lay it down. I have the authority to lay it down because they don't understand that he's doing that. Even later, they would say he was killed, you know, by others' authority and by others' choices. But Jesus is saying, no, mine.
Well, and like, you know, the last episode we recorded with Jesus walking on the water and saying, you know, like, I am here, you know, like I am God, I'm in control, I have the ability to do all these things. And what I love is just like, the people were divided in their opinions. You know, it's like, I can kind of see, it's like, this is some crazy stuff he says, you know, like not every human being that ever came on the earth made claims like this. You know, it's like, it's interesting that some people were just like, this is crazy stuff. How can we believe this? It's crazy.
Actually, this parable is sandwiched right in between. If you go back to chapter 9 and read what just happened, Jesus had healed the blind man.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pharisees had brought the blind man in to be interrogated, and they're asking him, you know, who did it? And he says, he goes through and he says, I don't know. All I know is I once was blind, but now I can see.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus comes back. I mean, they're mad at the blind man because he's testifying to the miracle of Christ. How's it come back and say it? I'm just trying to flip up there to it, but it says, if you were blind, you would have been in sin, but now you claim to see. Your guilt still remains. But Jesus comes back and said, no, your guilt, you weren't blind because of your sin. I still haven't found the section I wanted, sorry. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, the man asked. I tell you that I may believe in him. You are looking at him. In fact, he is the one speaking to you now. And the man replied, Lord, I believe. Well, you know, the Pharisees were so mad at the blind man, they said, just get out of here. You know, we want nothing to do with it. You know, we can't persuade you any other way.
Yeah.
Then Jesus tells this parable, and then he concludes at the very end of it, people are divided. You know, some believe and others don't.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting, you know, that there does seem to be, in other gospels too, it talks about people being amazed at his teaching. Other people, you know, there's always
the naysayers.
Yeah, there's naysayers. There's people who don't believe. There's people who are outright angry.
Yeah.
There's people who just kind of can't believe it because it sounds too far-fetched. But it's like there are these strong responses to Jesus. You know, there's very few people who didn't have an opinion or didn't care enough. Like usually people ended up having strong feelings about him one way or the other. You're right. I think that's, I do think it's like, and it makes me wonder, you know, there are two opinions here, right? Demon possessed or God. Like those are opposites, right? They're not quite the same. It's like, why do some people look at Jesus and say, and just and can't get it, other people look at Jesus and say, yeah, I get it. That seems to be a very mysterious thing as to how people react to Jesus. I don't have any reasoning for how that works. I don't know if you guys do.
Well, the other thing is Jesus is such a master teacher. He takes them from one thing that happens to the next, to the next, to the next, laying that foundation for their belief, for them to see, for them to understand. And they put it together, a lot of them put it together later, but they can't put it together. They can't even comprehend it all at first. He's just amazing. You know, these I am statements John talks about, mm-hmm. these are two of them, and they're thinking, huh? I'm sure they're just standing back thinking, you know, we know the disciples didn't get it themselves, and they were with him all the time.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder the crowd didn't.
Right.
But Jesus loves so much that he keeps trying, and he keeps building and telling him and talking to him. And
I do like the I statement. You know, I am the shepherd. I know my sheep. I lay down my life for my sheep. Jesus is literally saying, this is what my whole purpose is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's interesting that he seems so focused on his death. You know, I mean, it's the foundational, the cross is the foundational, most basic principle of what we believe mm-hmm. to be true about God.
Well, and their whole system was based on sacrifice. We don't think that way. We don't even get some of the references he's making to sacrifice that they would get because of their whole temple sacrificial system and how it all... Sometimes he's standing right in the temple when he's teaching these mm-hmm. things to them.
Yeah.
And talking about sacrifices and that kind of stuff because he's trying to connect it all for them. That the old system of sacrifices is going to be done. He is now going to be the once and for all sacrifice for all of us.
Can you believe it? Change is taking place, and they're objecting to it.
That's a human normal human tendency, right? Yeah. The other thing I find interesting throughout this whole process of reading through this gospel is that Jesus has such his enemies are the religious elite, mm-hmm. and I just find that to be the people who knew the most. about the scriptures were the most opposed.
Least,
and I guess like we're saying in the chapter 9, the passage about being blind, it's like this guy who was blind for years and years is healed, has an experience with Jesus, and he accepts. And the people who, you know, would have read all the right books and known all the prophecies and known, you know, what the Messiah was going to, you know, look like and do were you know, rejected him. And I just think that's so interesting and weird. You know, being a religious person, as I have been, you know, going to church my whole life, it just seems like a kind of a scary kind of thing, you know, that we can be in church and we can know about Jesus and we can just still reject him.
And still miss it.
And it's so easy to miss. And that's like really sobering to me. It's like
it's when we come back and we set up our own rules for being how good I am. Well, I went to church 50 times out of 52 this year, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm good now. You know, I'm fulfilled. But going to church doesn't do it. You know, it's believing in Jesus.
Yeah. Well, Ken and Sherry, thank you very much. I've enjoyed this time with you guys. I appreciate your willingness to read and discuss the Bible with me during Lent, and I hope you enjoyed it too. And if anyone is listening, then I hope they enjoy it as well. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.